monster.
Well, my kids can work my
Steven. Miles already.
Pork monster, yes.
I'm too excited. These people are hysterical this morning.
All right.
Here's my cousin.
Good morning, all. Thanks for coming. We have the meeting this morning, the Intergovernmental Relations Committee, on the 30th of January. Madam Clerk, for attendance, please.
Supervisors Holloway.
Here.
Rakowski.
Here.
Fuller.
Here.
Robert.
Here.
Dmitrievich.
Excused.
Sanfilippo.
Excused.
Mr. Chair.
Sanfilippo is present. Oh, here. Thank you. Yes, I am here.
We do have a quorum.
Good. Number one, please.
Number one is a resolution from Supervisors Holloway and Mayo supporting the Workforce Mobility Act that would restore funding to walk public transit systems that were scheduled 10% in the 10% in the 2011-2013 state budget bill.
Okay, thank you. We have Supervisor Dmitrievich is here, so we're all set. Wonderful, thank you. The chairman, or either Chairman Mayo, Chairman Holloway, either wants to speak first. You're the authors. I figured that would be it. So. Supervisor Mayo, come on up, please. Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, distinguished colleagues this morning. Y'all look awfully lovely this morning. I hope y'all move approval of this item number one. It will help Milwaukee County to, as it happens, restore some of our services. You know, this is one-time shock. It may improve our rollback fares, may rollback increased lines. So I hope you can do this. I would like to thank Chairman Holloway, Supervisor Holloway of this committee, for his leadership on this item, because he asked me, can I come along? And I thought that was a wonderful idea that he gave me. And I want to thank you personally.
You're welcome.
Mr. Chairman, will you have a Supervisor Holloway quiet, so I'm trying to stroke him. And but on a serious note, this will help, our transit system, because you know our transit system needs all the help we can. But we also got to start looking at dedication. We got to get the transit system off the property tax roll, so we can continue to have this wonderful system. We have a good drivers. We have a good management team in place. Let's continue to make this Milwaukee County transit system one of the best in the country. Thank you.
Thank you, Supervisor. Mr. Holloway, any other comments? Supervisor Brown and Supervisor Fryer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well,
you're welcome.
Approval.
Okay. Thank you.
But also, I would like to request to be added a co-sponsor. Not only do I support the resolution, but I think it's lucky on a resolution with Supervisors Holloway and Mayor.
Are they willing to take you?
I don't know.
Oh, yes. We're all for yes. Supervisor Brevard. Thank you, Supervisor.
I was going to ask the same, Mr. Chair.
Okay. You recorded? Okay. Do I see affirmative nods there?
Of course.
Do we have Mr. Younger from Sewer Pack in attendance and Mr. Grant, transportation? Do you gentlemen want to say anything at all? You came down? Okay. Right. Come up and introduce yourselves, then, if you may make any quick comments, obviously. Much in favor of this. Appreciate it.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Ken Younger with Southeastern Wisconsin Regional Planning Commission was asked to chair. And then to note that this proposal to restore the 10% reduction is critical to the preservation of transit service in Milwaukee County. State law has established the state really as the principal funder of public transit in the state of Wisconsin. In the year 2010, the state provided 62% of the total public funded needed to operate the Milwaukee County transit system. So maintaining that level of funding and increasing it annually to address inflation is truly essential to preserving transit service. Over the last 10 years, the the state has not increased funding or has not increased it commensurate with inflation. As a result, the transit systems had to face a 20% reduction in transit service, 50% increase in fare well beyond inflation. Without the special Federal Highway Administration, Congestion Mitigation, Air Quality Improvement Program funds, CMAQ funds, Milwaukee County Transit would have faced an 8% reduction in service this year, 30% increase in fares. And while CMAQ funds may potentially eliminate this need to reduce service or increase fares over the next 2 years, beyond that, their future availability is uncertain. So there's a need, in order to assure the preservation of transit service, to restore this 10% cut in service and to get the state back to maintaining and increasing state transit assistance on an annual basis commensurate with inflation. In the alternative, it's essential to put in place a 0.5% dedicated local sales tax for public transit, as nearly all peer metropolitan areas have across the nation. That is the way that transit is funded really across the United States.
Thank you, sir. Grant?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, committee members. Lloyd Grant, Manager Director for the Transit System. I would echo Mr. Yonker's comments. I believe that the transit system is currently under significant financial strain as a result of the $6.85 million cut in state operating assistance, and that there's an urgent need for relief that I don't think I can overstate. The CMAQ funds that we were granted earlier in later in 2011, as Mr. Yonker indicated, those funds are only available through about January of 2014. So at that time, we will once again be facing a significant crisis in the transit system in terms of the need to either look at substantial reductions in service or a combination of that, as well as fare increases. So from our perspective, we certainly wholeheartedly support this resolution to restore the 10% cut in funding for transit systems across the state.
Something I would think could Jermaine just give you a minute to how did the whole transit open house, I guess, rapid transit go on Saturday. What do you see coming for those routes, please?
Well, we had a ceremony this past weekend to launch or kick off the Metro Express service, and we had a dry run of the service yesterday with many passengers taking advantage of the service. Today is the first day of the Metro Express service operating, as well as the other changes that were necessary as a result of the 10% cutting funding. So I think this week, as we move forward, the biggest test is going to be helping the public and our riders to understand the route changes and the schedule, and we have many people currently in place to assist the public with that.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
I want to get back to supervisors who were there Saturday, Supervisor Demetri Abridge, Supervisor Michael Mayo, Supervisor Haas, Senator Larson, of course myself, and I'm not running for nothing, but I was there, and just want to say that we were all there supporting. It was a nice little crowd.
Very good. I can see that to report it to. My last editorial comment before asking for a vote on this resolution, that would support the Workforce Mobility Act 10% cut that we saw, was that we knew the legislature wasn't going to vote on the sales tax and the referendum. I know it's a big issue for many people, but I think all of us are in common, and I do want to, compliment the county board and our staff. When the governor was going to put the transit funding in the general funding, we went to State Fair. We were led by Supervisor Dmitrievich, who led that, and I did speak also in front of the Joint Finance, and the Joint Finance actually, turned around on the governor and said, yeah, that would be an absolute crime for transportation in general fund. We've been in with hospitals, of course, and everything else. So this board and us working together and our staff, we've come a long way here. Now we're talking about specific cuts we had. I'd hate to think what it would have been if we we would note that the Joint Finance, I think through our lobbying and our work in many areas, that's why we can never give up in any area. I know I've said that before, but in all these different areas we're going to talk about today, we can't give up either because, we've got to unite and work and fight for funding for our county, for our people. So this is an example of that. Like everything else, we're not out of the woods because we didn't have the CMAQ funding, as you both talked about, the county executive admitted, of course, he went publicly on TV on that too, in the entire streets of the service. So, okay, Supervisor Brugger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think it should be underscored that this should not, this resolution should not be necessary. It's necessitated by state government turning their backs on the expressed voice of the people in November of 08, when they voted in their majority to tax themselves for purposes of transit and parks, as we all know. The fact is that elected officials at the state level have simply ignored the expressed voice of the people. And I think that raises some very, very troubling questions about the meaning of the voice of the citizen in this representative form of government, and I think speaks loudly about the influence of minority money in the American political process, and as expressed particularly here in the state of Wisconsin. It's unfortunate, but recall that the people voted in their majority, that they asked to be taxed, that anti-tax fervor was in no sense responsible for the state not acting, or if it was, it was against the will of the majority.
Okay, thank you, Supervisor. At this time, then, we do have a motion by Supervisor Brown for approval on number one. Madam Clerk.
Supervisors Holloway.
Aye.
Crosby.
Aye.
DeBroer.
Aye.
Robert.
Aye.
McVeer.
Aye.
Matt Whipple.
Aye.
Mr. Chair.
Aye.
Motion approves.
Thank you. Yes, sir. Supervisor Borkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Pork monster.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, I actually had forgotten how much fun it is to have Supervisor Broderick on this committee because you know that you're going to have editorial at least once or twice throughout the course of the meeting. So thanks for doing that for us.
Some of us should be conscious of the public will in our votes.
Supervisor Brugger getting a call on you, so
I got it.
Okay. Let us go on. We have what I'm going to do, committee, please, is we do have, as normal on our last agenda item, our staff to talk about legislative updates. And what we're really getting in 2, 3, 4, and 5 are legislative updates. So before we bring the speakers up in those respective areas that we do have in our audience today, I want to ask Mr. De La Rosa just kind of give us an overview since we'll be talking about any issues he wants to overview anyway. So, okay, Mr. De La Rosa, please.
At the outset, I'd like to follow up on the comment that Trent Holloway said. This week, since I think that the Trump economy drafts was funded by Senator Morrison and Senator very briefly, just to give the committee's members of labor for a pass at the schedule of the time period and stuff, which I give to the state budget, basically concluded the February 12 period. That basically leaves us with two more four periods for regular business in Madison this year. There'll be a two-week period in February, namely February 14th to the 23rd, and one period in March, 6th and 15th. That would basically terminate or end regular session business. Unless we call that a special session or something of extraordinary which happens to fall again. For all intents and purposes, that would end the legislative session on the floor that is happening in the Senate. With that said, there's still a lot of activity, still a lot of work that needs to be done. One of which particularly relates to items 2 and 3 that we talked about deals with the housing of state funds. As you recall, During the course of the state budget, 10% cut that was initiated by the state, basically across the board. In addition to that, there is also going to be the lapping of funds. Efficiency that the current administration was going to determine to make those cuts and propose them to the Joint Finance Committee. That proposal has been put together, and I think $150 million worth of additional cuts. The time has been submitted. It has been challenged or questioned. The Joint Finance Committee, which means it will come up for a public hearing at some point in the next, probably in the next couple of weeks. Put in perspective, at the end of this month, Department of Revenue should be receiving some figures that will be updated relative to state revenues provided to the legislature. It's probably sometime shortly thereafter the Joint Finance Committee will be meeting based on the updated figures. With that said, there's specific items of concern in the district attorney's program and also the UK's under question for negative fifth class of this event in Milwaukee County. So with that said, there's a provision back on those points for the rest of the items.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Rosa. And may I presume before we hear from Mr. Martin that this information we have in our back, of course, is from our district attorney, Mr. Chisholm, looking at the attorney victim witness program here. But this information, presume, as usual, will be sent to our delegation, the Joint Finance, whoever needs to get this information, please.
Oh, yes,
Your
Honor,
very good. All right, number two, Madam Clerk, please.
Item number two is from the District Attorney, an information report on a 2012 revenue deficit in the Victim Witness Program. This went to the Finance and Audit Committee, which took no action. This is informational unless otherwise directed.
Okay, Mr. Mark, introduce yourself and summarize for us, please.
Morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm James Mark from the District Attorney's Office. And Mr. De La Rosa gave an excellent overview of the issue. There actually is another issue that's percolating as well. There are two principal reasons for our potential revenue deficit. The first one is that it appears that we were overpaid by the state in state fiscal year 2011, which ended on June 30th of 2011. During state fiscal year 2011, we were reimbursed for about 60% of the costs of the Victim Witness Program against a budgeted rate of about 52%. And we've been advised by the Justice Department that apparently what happened is that some of the revenue that was collected from the victim witness surcharge that should have been credited to the Sexual Assault Victim Services or SAVES Fund was actually, it was mistakenly credited to the Victim Witness Fund. So this Wednesday, February 1st, the legislature's Joint Audit Committee is meeting. And one of the items on the agenda is whether to authorize an audit of the victim witness surcharge. So that's the first piece. And then the second reason is the one that Mr. De La Rosa talked about, the requirement that the Department of Justice and other state agencies are required to lapse expenditure authority to the general fund. And as part of that lapse plan, the Department of Justice is proposing to lapse $517,039 of victim witness revenue to the general fund. And one thing I should emphasize is that the Intergovernmental Relations Division is really on top of this issue, working very hard for the county's interests. In addition, we are working through the Wisconsin District Attorneys Association as well. Obviously, this is an issue of statewide concern, and the District Attorneys Association is very concerned about maintaining existing services to crime victims and witnesses. So we have a representative on that board, Deputy District Attorney Patrick Kenny, and he's been leading our effort in that regard. Thank you.
Any questions?
Supervisor Brooks, sure.
Is there any formal assistance that you'd like from this committee in this manner, or communication or anything that might be helpful, or are you guys kind of handling it from here without any formal action?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the District Attorneys Association, through the President, has sent a letter to the Joint Finance Committee. And what the DAs are really emphasizing, the part about this that really seems unfair, is that last year, when after the governor's budget was introduced, the counties were advised that they could pretty much count on probably a reimbursement rate of 52%. We were conservative, and we have a reimbursement rate of 51% in our 2012 adopted budget. But the district attorney's argument is, look, you told us we could count on 52%, and now you're saying it could be as low as 41 or 42%. So I think they're making that argument effectively.
I'm just wondering if responsibility for miscrediting this has been fixed in any particular department. My assumption is it was the state's mistake.
Well, I don't think we know, and I believe that's one of the reasons why that item is going to be considered by the legislature's Joint Audit Committee on Wednesday. I don't know the details of that. I was just told by the director of the Office of Crime Victim Services that apparently that's what happened. And I can say that I don't know how our clerk's office and other clerk's offices can really keep this straight, because you've got, just on criminal cases, you've got about 30 different surcharges on assessments. Every month there's a two-page report that the clerk's office has to file on the collections with the different assessments and surcharges. It's always been a mystery to me as how everybody keeps it straight. So I don't know. I think we have to wait until there's an audit done. We don't have any. I don't have any knowledge about how the mistakes were made.
But, Mr. Chairman, it certainly seems that this was likely to be at least an administrative error on the part of the state government. One would only hope that they would be willing to make a correction where they made an error.
Yep. Right, I know we're following up. Mark mentioned our ITRs on top of this too, so I'm sure this information is received. All the support we can.
Thank you very much.
Sure. Supervisor Holloway.
Hello, how are you? I haven't seen you in a very long time.
It's fine. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
Have a good day.
Thank you. Too. Number three, please.
Number three is from the Interim Fiscal Budget Administrator, an informational report on the impact of state funding lapse on Milwaukee County youth aid allocation. This is informational, unless otherwise directed by the committee.
Thank you. Introduce yourselves, please.
Mr. Chairman, County Supervisor Eric Moe. I'm the Administrator for the Delinquency Court Services Division.
CJ Paul, Assistant Fiscal and Budget Administrator from that fiscal.
Okay. You have the floor. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, Supervisors, Interim Fiscal Administrator, you should have in front of you a brief update. DAS was asked to produce a impact of the lapse relative to youth aids funding that the county receives. This, again, being the lapse issue just talked about with the DA's office. We did receive our youth aids contract, which is kind of like the final number. Originally, came in front of you back in December saying we projected a sizable youth aids reduction. We now have that, and there was two negative adjustments, $3.6 million in original Act 32, and then an additional $1.4 million, which was more recently learned of. That's the lapse adjustment that was we were recently informed of. That brings us to approximately $2.9 million when you compare to 2011. With that said, the report also mentions a footnote that there was an additional $1.8 million, which actually hit in 2011. We've also provided reports both to Finance and Health and Human Needs as an update to this issue. And myself and CJ is here, excuse me, if you have any other questions.
So, before I take any other questions, I see the 38 versus 36. So, originally had 2.9. This initial 1.8. So, we're looking at $4 million. Is that correct? As far as reductions, is that the way to summarize it?
Mr. Chairman, Supervisors. It is. If the actual contract amount anticipated for 2011 was $38 million.
Okay.
What we actually received was $36 million.
Right.
So what you see here is the $36.1 million,
right,
which was the actual 11 amount. If you go back to what the anticipated 11 amount was that I believe the contract was signed for, was the $38 million. And I can actually hand this out if you don't. This kind of gives you both of them so you can see what's different.
Okay. Thank you.
So this just shows you both numbers, the difference from the actual $38 million, which was the original 11 contract amount, and then what you see in your memo on the second table, the $36 million.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can you explain, especially for those who are listening, what this multi-million dollar cut is under our services? What type of things, how does it affect our services that we're providing? In a brief answer.
It will be brief, actually. Thank you. Mr. Chairman and Supervisors, if you recall, in December when we came with our contracts, we did six-month contracts for a variety of our areas. Both in our contract report and the finance, right now we are diligently looking at our projections for 2012, and as of right now, I believe we have approximately $790,000 revenue shortfall. And so, as of right now, I am happy to report that we have not had to have any wait lists or make any reductions. Basically, almost on a weekly basis, we're monitoring the number of kids that go to corrections, the number of police referrals that are coming in, the age of those youth. All of those are sort of dynamic factors that go into, at the end of the day, what does our fiscal situation look like. So as of right now, we have not had to make that decision. We do plan to come back in March, because we do have a number of contracts that serve a number of youth that basically expire at the end of June 30th. And so we'll have to be making some decisions over the next 60 days, both within the division and department-wide, as to how we're going to deal with that issue.
Thank you.
Thank you. Supervisor Holloway, sir.
I'm very interested in the contracting aspect of it. Before you finalize it, I'd like for you to come and discuss that here, or at EFL, or at least at some particular committee. I have some concerns, like racing, what we're going to do there, versus shifting things up north, or whether we're going to hold some of the students that are not a serious problem to save money. There are a lot of different things we can do. I'd like to be a part of that.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Anything else? All right. Thank you for continuing to work on this.
All right.
I know you keep us in front of you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Please come to me. I like to hear about it.
Okay.
I put a lot of time in fighting for reduced money, sending money up there to wells and places. I'd like to be a part of the decision making when it comes down to that. And also, we did a little lobbying and also politics with racing. They're slobbering them out for us or whatever, so we need to work out things and try to do the best deal for Milwaukee County.
Thank you. Done a lot in that area. Thank you. Number four.
Item number four is from the directors of the Department of Family Care, Department of Aging, and the Administrator for the Disability Services Division. Information reports reviewing the Wisconsin Department of Health Services proposal for long-term care sustainability. This is informational, unless otherwise directed.
Well, I certainly want to hear from Ms. Ledger, Ms. Lydane, Ms. Stein. Should we go, Ms. Lydane and Stein, do you want to come up together? Both your perspectives on this, please. I've heard supposedly there's no waiting list, but we know there are. So.
Waiting list.
They don't have any waiting list.
morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
What's the matter?
Introduce yourselves, please, to those of us.
Jerry Lighty, Administrator, Disability Services Division.
And I'm Stephanie Stein, the Director of the Department on Aging.
Okay, as most of you know, in July, as a result of the budget, there was a cap put on family care, which basically meant for Disability Services Division, we had started with a waiting list of about 3,000 persons. We had been taking individuals off that waiting list at about 130 to 140 every month. And at the time that they placed the cap on family care, we were had taken almost 12 to 1,300 individuals off of the waiting list. So that really kind of stopped us where we were with the waiting list. And then we still had new individuals that are continuing to be referred to us every day. So that waiting list continues to grow. From July 1st to this point, we've been able to take individuals off of that waiting list through attrition slots. And actually, the Department on Aging and Disability Services have been splitting the total number that we have, and it's about anywhere from 65 to 70 individuals that we are able to take off of the waiting list since July. That does change a little bit monthly depending on the number that we have that are that we lose through attrition. There also have been some emergency slots available throughout the state for persons who find themselves in crisis. You can request those slots on a case-by-case basis, and counties have had access to that. Well, most recently, we learned that CMS had forwarded a letter to the state indicating to lift the cap immediately. And apparently there was some question, and Kelly and Roy can probably get more into the specifics, about whether the state really had approval initially to place the cap on based upon the agreements they had with the federal government for the waiver to implement family care. This letter was made public. We have heard that the cap is going to be lifted. We've had discussions with the state, but at this point, we are still working as if there is a cap in place. We have had some, there seems to be, I think, on one level we've heard that there needs to be some legislative action to actually lift the cap, and that there are several bills, or at least two bills, and I think you have them attached in your packet right now, that are being proposed in order to lift the cap. Simultaneously with lifting the cap, the state has come out with a number of what they call reforms or sustainability issues. And it seems that, as you know, the state has a $500 million Medicaid problem, that they are looking at family care to help them address some of the fiscal challenges they have with that. So in order to lift the cap on family care, they have projected some savings that they must achieve. And they're attempting to have those savings through these reforms that they have identified. And I think you have each of those reforms in your packet. Some of the reforms are very specific to the care management organization, and then some of the reforms will impact the resource centers, more specifically the Department on Aging and Disability Services issues. We have submitted, we've kind of analyzed those reforms. Some of them we're very concerned about. We believe it's going to impact individual consumers' choice. It also is going to put more pressure on natural family supports. There are also some functions that are specifically related to the resource centers that we do not currently do now. It would mean that we would have to add more staff in order to meet those, identify those. What's unclear at this point is how the reforms will actually be implemented. As most of you know, the devil's in the detail. We don't know what the timeline is for them. We have asked, you know, does that mean when the cap is lifted that the reforms will automatically be in place? Will they be implemented one at a time? We have not been able to get kind of a clear answer on how that happens. I think we are clear, though, that in order to lift the cap, they need the reforms because they need to try to identify the savings. Again, some of them we feel are, you know, seriously are going to impact consumers. So the choices that people make now in going into long-term care funding or family care will be very different when they implement these reforms. And I think we've yet to see how, and we don't know how they're going to be rolled out. With that, I'm going to let Ms. Stein just follow up.
Thank you. We were extraordinarily concerned about the letter from the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services because, of course, older people had reached entitlement in family care 6 years ago had no waiting list virtually since 2002. So what the CMS letter said was that the state was directed to immediately return to July 1st and enroll every person that was eligible, which in the case of aging would mean 650 people who have applied for a long-term care program through the Aging Resource Center since July 1st and who have been placed on waiting lists. We're able, as Jerry said, to serve about 75 people a month and to use emergency slots for people in dire need, but that is not enough to keep up with. We used to enroll 150 people a month before the caps went on. So, in fact, older people in this community and in every other county where entitlement was reached have been clearly illegally being denied a service to which they are eligible. The caps obviously have not been lifted since there is a legislation now that repeals the budget language that put the caps on in the first place. That's what the legislation does, is repeal the budget language. And then these reforms that, by the way, the department just posted to its website on Thursday. That's when they became legally available to everyone. People had advanced drafts of them, but now they're up for comment. Could potentially change the entire tenor of the program. There are a lot of providers out there who have built businesses based on what these programs were supposed to be from the beginning. That's an economic impact. But there will be a real impact, I believe, on older people and their families and people with disabilities, because clearly what these reforms do is say, let's try and force people to use less services, either based on family support or based on some money. We don't know where that money comes from. But people clearly will be provided with information that they were never provided with before. For instance, one of the reforms says when a human service worker, a social worker, or a nurse discusses a care plan with a person, goes through all of the rigmarole to get to what the person needs to remain independent, they're then to discuss the cost of that care with the person. Well, I don't know how you do that. There are five different options for people in Milwaukee County, five different organizations, all of whom have different contracts with 700 or 800 agencies. How do care managers and nurses know what a care plan will cost, based on all of those permutations? And why should it matter to a person who's trying to get their needs met to live independently? I don't think that anybody discusses with people the cost of nursing home care, which is clearly will bankrupt them in 5 to 6 months. If that's the only option, that's what people have to do. That's what people are forced to do. And, of course, when people enter nursing homes, no families are forced to come in and give baths or, for that matter, provide any money. People are individual adults. The other thing that's very disturbing is that these reforms tend to say that people don't need as much care management, and clearly people who go into some kind of alternate housing, a group home or assisted living or a nursing home, don't need case management because that's duplicative. And what we found out as advocates for older people and people with disabilities is that if a person is in family care or partnership or IRIS, if they have an advocate with them in a nursing home or an assisted living facility, their care tends to be much better because someone is looking out for them. So that whole assumption is rather strange. And then as Administrator Lide pointed out to you, there are all kinds of interesting things placed on aging and disability resource centers where we are to intervene in the lives of people who want to move to an assisted living facility or a nursing home. We're to see them within 7 days. We're to work with the hospital facilities to try and divert people. We're to try and do all of these things to use other community resources when, in fact, when all of the care, the long-term care, case-managed care, was switched to the managed care organizations and taken away from county points of entry, all of the money that went to do those community interventions went with that care. So we have neither the staff nor the money to hire staff to do all of that front-end nice stuff that could help probably in keeping people, for instance, from re-entering hospitals. So there's all kinds of new jobs placed on aging and disability resource centers with clearly no mention of additional funding or staff for aging and disability resource centers. So I'm very concerned about not only that these reforms are sort of happening in the department saying, well, we're going to do these reforms, so lift the caps, but what is that going to mean for consumers, for families, for agencies, for businesses, and for us? We don't know. Clearly lifting the caps and is a good lifting the caps and continuing with enrolling people in family care, IRIS, partnership PACE is not only a good thing, but it seems to us that it is the thing that the federal government is saying to the state you must do. It's what's going to happen behind the scenes that has us pretty worried.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You're welcome.
Well, when I read through all of this, and I'm not trying to be like alarmist or overreact, so I guess I'm looking for feedback on that. I looked at it, and it seemed to me that the high level of care that we've given for persons with for our senior citizens in need of these specialized services over the years, which I've been really proud of. I mean, it's one of the things, one of the success stories of Milwaukee County. That has really been a model, I thought, not only locally but nationally, is starting to unravel and be unraveled. When I start, as I read through and this whole idea of natural supports, I think it's great if the son or the daughter can come in and take care of folks and use some of their own resources. That's what happened 100 years ago, but 100 years ago we also had people who had no resources, who died on their own, starved in their own small rooms, etc. And so I look at the change here, and it's scary. I'm looking at this thinking what they're in effect doing is, in order to comply with the state, I mean, with the federal government, they'll lift the cap, which is great. I agree. But then they'll so strip the services, but still call it family care. It's like a sham or a farce. And I really do think that this is a sea change in the delivery of care to persons with
to seniors, and then we're supposed to be adding persons with disabilities into that mix. And so the whole issue of natural supports is a big concern to me. And then also, you also mentioned that all the staff additional duties to deploy the staff to the nursing home and the residential settings within 7 days. I read it the same way you said, which is like, oh, okay, once they get to the point, nobody wants to go there. So they, if they have to go there, then we're supposed to go in and tell them they're going to kick you out. You can't. Like, it's just, it's not, to me, it's not a good way to, you know, see where this direction is going. And I don't think it's the kind of thing that's a catchy news story. And to me, it's one of those things, it's kind of reminiscent of mental health issues until somebody actually dies or is assaulted or whatever, and then that becomes the rallying cry. You have a lot of people and a lot of misery in the interim. So am I overreacting to this, or is that kind of what you were being concerned about as well?
Chairman, Supervisor DeBruin, I don't think you're overreacting, but the point being, we really don't know.
Okay.
You know, all of these are sort of ideas when you read the papers. None of them say, as of this date, if you don't have 5 activities of daily living deficits, you cannot move into a group home. None of them say those things. None of them, you have to react to them all philosophically. And where families really do provide enormous free support to older people and people with disabilities. They are the people that usually are helping people write checks, are taking them to the doctors, are doing all kinds of things. So to say that families have to find more resources, as Jerry can tell you, once some of these folks with disabilities get to be served, their families are so burned out and so poor that being able to do any more would really be fairly hard.
Yeah, and I think for us, particularly having had a waiting list for so long, by the time we're getting to people, and some of the individuals on our waiting list have been waiting almost 10 years. So families have been there, have been pulling the load. You have a lot of older parents who have young adults, and they're looking to, you know, need some additional support. So they're not able to provide that level of support. They would like to, but they've been doing it for so long, waiting for the cap, you know, waiting to actually see some support. So I think, and there are so many individuals who just don't have any family resources here. They're living by themselves. You know, they're struggling. And, you know, it also seems like, too, they're going to have to start bartering, you know, with families. And as I think as Ms. Stein says, we just don't know how it's going to be implemented. We don't know, you know, how and when. And those are some of the questions we're trying to get answered that we haven't been successful thus far.
Well, how do you bartle with somebody with dementia? I mean,
well, you're right.
You know, whose kids live in, you know,
who has an intellectual disability?
Yeah. Okay. So, all right. So these are they sent out the information saying, please respond to this. Do you have any indication as to? And I'm assuming they're doing this to other counties across the state as well to have them the ones that are involved is to respond. Do they? Do you have any anticipation that they will change what they're proposing based on your response?
No input.
Yeah, okay. And what's the timeline as to what, is there a timeline they've given you as to when they might actually turn their philosophical ideas into some sort of reality as far as your requirements?
Not that we've heard, but they have to have, see, the savings are attached to the reforms. And in order to expand family care and lift the cap, they need to start implementing them relatively soon in order to see the savings. And we actually had Senator Darling at a Commission on Aging meeting on Friday, and we didn't get a lot of clarity. She thought the caps had been lifted. She was so happy to announce to everyone, well, the caps have lifted.
That's like her.
Well, then just one final point. So we don't know when this is going to happen. We don't know the specifics of what it's going to be, but we do see it kind of coming on the horizon. How does this affect the county's research center and all of those pieces financially, your ability to, what are you currently required to do that would be affected by this? Would it be adding all the additional, would they force you to add all that additional staff, and would it be a county property taxpayer expense, or what? How do we then?
I don't know
that either.
I don't think we know. We both have a contract with the state for various activities that are performed in the resource center. At this point, those additional activities are not in our contract. But would they be negotiated? Would we get more money? They already know that the resource centers are not adequately funded. There was originally a proposal in the budget that did not move forward to add money to fund the resource centers more sufficiently for the activities that we're doing. But we don't know for sure what kind of changes they may make to those contracts as we move forward.
Thank you.
Thank you. Supervisor Petraeus.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was at that Commission on Aging meeting on Friday as I serve on that commission, and it was definitely an interesting meeting, which prompted me to put out a statement on Friday because I couldn't believe it. You know, we had Senator Darling there basically telling us that we should be celebrating that the cap has been lifted. And the thing to me that was so surprising is that A, it hasn't been lifted, and B, I'm not going to celebrate for something that seniors were entitled to and deserve since July. You know, in fact, every day that goes by that the state does not provide those services to seniors on family care, I mean, I think it's nearly, I don't know that I would say illegal, but it's definitely against what the federal government has mandated via letter in December. And the interesting thing is that we haven't had a waiting list on family care for seniors, I believe, in the last 10 years. So now we have this, like, artificially created list of people that are waiting. And as we know with seniors, there's progressive issues. Literally every day that goes by is more severe. And I know the chairman knows this because of his experience in the health sector. So, you know, that's number one. Number two, and this is why I'm getting this out there, especially for people listening, and I think Supervisor DeBruin set it up, but I gotta take it home here, because the other thing is, in the governor's state of the state address,
mm-hmm.
I don't know about you, I almost fell off my couch when he said, quote, his funding for Medicaid allowed the state to expand family care all across the state.
Mm-hmm.
So-called quote. The next day, AARP, you know, sent out a release saying, are you kidding me? If anything, I mean, I almost wanted to call for that to be redacted and censured from the speech, because it was unbelievable to me that that could even have been said and go down in history. What's going on here is a scam, and it's a scam on people who need the services the most. It's disgusting. And what I'm really scared of, and I'm going to end here, is to tell us to put a cap on there that never should have been there. Then the federal government says you need to take it off and serve these people. Then we're supposed to celebrate that you've taken it off, but you haven't already. Oh, and now there's $80 million in reforms on Milwaukee County before we get the cap that is illegally put on there anyways. And here's the thing about the reform. Because of the state budget, the Secretary of Health and Human Services now has very unique unilateral powers.
Yes.
And what we're calling for, and what I called for in my statement on Friday, is public, and I want to be real clear about this, public hearings on the reforms in Milwaukee County. This is the county that's going to be the most severely impacted by these reforms that were, you know, arbitrarily put up on the website Thursday night. What a slap in the face to seniors in Milwaukee County that have been, and to our family care, Department of Family Care, who's running an excellent program. And this is the last thing I want to leave you with, is when the Legislative Fiscal Bureau did their analysis, the Milwaukee County Family Care Program came out just fine. It was found to be, per legislative report, fiscally sound. So why do we need $80 million in reforms when we're running a wonderful program? In fact, other communities are modeling their programs after us. Are you serious? So it's a scam. I can't believe it. It's uncalled for. And we're not going to stop. We want public hearings. This is not going to be done unilaterally. $80 million reforms in some backdoor deal. That's not how we treat seniors in Milwaukee County. What we're going to do is we're going to call. We're not going to stop. We're going to get public hearings. And then they have it nervous say that those reforms are from the input of these, you know, meetings across the state. Seniors didn't come and talk about reforms in family care. They talked about their needs. And then they lied and said that that was the input for reforms. So look, the state and this county is not standing for this anymore. We're not going to be lied to anymore. And you're jeopardizing people's lives here. This is sad. So thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
You're welcome. And I know we're talking about care management. Ms. Fletcher, I know it's appropriate for you to come up now. Since that was the
end,
I understand that. I'll ask the supervisor to speak then. Thank you.
You may have something to say.
Responsive to that.
Okay. That's why I thought it was appropriate to come up. If you have something else, you want to go first, supervisor?
Well, it's in response to the ongoing discussion.
Sure.
If I may, and sure. At the risk of offering another editorial to Supervisor Borkowski's earlier point, were I to editorialize on this, it would be called social Darwinism applied. Now, that's not likely to be read in our current single source of news here in printed media in this town.
You're talking about single source.
I know that. See, he wasn't here for the earlier one. He doesn't control editorial policy.
There you go.
But, and Steve does not control editorial policy.
That's right.
But those who do fail to couch it and never will couch it in those terms given their political perspective. Nor will the superficial electronic media reporting, if you can call it that, by and large that's about weather, as I understand it. That seems to be the lead story every night. So if we're not going to hear editorials from the major newspaper that couch this into terms that are appropriate, and if we're not going to hear it from the electronic media, my question is, who the hell are we going to hear it from? And that's the need I feel occasionally to summarize these kinds of issues in the form of what could be called perhaps an editorial, but is really a condensed form of outrage at the immoral behavior of a state government that wants to return us to the good old days of yesteryear that, in fact, Supervisor DeBruin referred to when she talked about people starving alone in their rooms without assistance.
He was listening to it. Go ahead.
Again, if that's an editorial, I apologize, but I sure as hell am not going to stop editorializing if that's what needs to be said. Because believe me, beyond this, this is where it will end. We'll hear nothing of that otherwise.
You're always welcome to editorialize your view.
Thank
Everybody
you.
Has
Thank you.
Ms. Ledger, introduce yourself in the comments that we've been talking about, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. County Board Supervisors, my name is Maria Ledger. I'm the Director of the Department of Family Care. Having gone through these sustainability drafts, clearly the drafts that impact, for the most part, on the managed care organizations received a great deal of attention from my staff and I. We are concerned about a number of areas, some of which you've already heard about. In the draft on family care administrative and program efficiencies, again, that's talking about reducing the level of care management available to people who live outside of their homes. We have concerns about that because we really understand how important an individual social worker and nurse are to their health and safety. But the other piece of it is those nurses and social workers who work with individuals who reside out of their homes who help return them to more independent settings. So
In 2011, my staff were able to relocate 552 people from nursing homes to more independent settings. 268 of those people went to adult family homes, group homes, and residential care apartment facilities, and 284 returned to their homes. So in the absence of a nurse and a social worker working with our placement team to identify appropriate supports and to really work with people to live more independently, I don't know if how many of those 552 people would have been able to move out of nursing homes. So we're very concerned about not being able to help people stay safe where they are, and if they can go in more independently, be able to do that. We're also concerned about, there was some discussion about being able to disenroll individuals who don't pay the room and board. When people live in group homes, their supports and services are paid for by the managed care organization. They're responsible for their room and board, the way that anyone is responsible for their mortgage payment or their rent payment. For individuals who don't currently pay their room and board, who have the financial wherewithal to do so and don't, the managed care organization cannot refer them for disenrollment from the program. So if we're able to go ahead and do that and really hold people to that requirement, that will be a benefit to the MCO. But we're also concerned because in the discussion about IRIS and self-directed supports, it talked about that particular document strengthening self-direction in both IRIS, which is the state's waiver, as well as the self-directed supports option that's available to people within family care. However, and it's important to note, and I think sometimes people forget in the mix of things, 40% of the people who receive services from the Milwaukee County Department of Family Care self-direct their some or all of their services. But the state talks about limiting group homes for people who live who receive their services through IRIS, so that if you're enrolled in IRIS and you're living as independently as possible and your needs change and you have to move to a group home, the draft talks about offering counseling to individuals that to disenroll from IRIS and move into family care. So family care will slowly begin to take on higher and higher cost cases, people with higher and higher needs. As it stands right now, the per member per month costs of IRIS participants is about $1,000 higher than it is for family care. Family care does a very good job in keeping people independent and healthy in the community and doing it cost effectively because of the infrastructure we've built around it. So we're concerned about sort of this adverse selection of moving higher cost and higher need people over to the managed care organizations. And we're also, I think as you've heard, concerned that when you talk about some sort of acuity-based guideline for people to move into group homes, what does that mean? Whose definition of acuity is that? It's entirely possible that someone, if they had an intact family system, if they had somebody who was able to help them, if they had a home to return to, would not need to be in a group home. But that, as you've heard, that simply is not the case for everybody that's enrolled in this program. We actually serve entire family systems, older adults and their adult disabled children. If you have parents and children enrolled in family care, there isn't an available individual to provide that support. So we're very concerned that people are going to be, in essence, locked out of a service that they need to stay out of a nursing home because they aren't fortunate enough to have a young, healthy, intact family. So those are our concerns with this. We're continuing to talk with the state about them. We want to, obviously, we're very, very interested in these caps being lifted. We want to be able to serve as many people as we can. We have done what we think is, and what the state honestly agrees, is a really good job in managing this program and in hitting high-quality indicators and being cost-effective, and we want to be able to continue to do that. We're concerned that some of these shifts are going to place an increasing burden on what really is a good program to find these dollars or to make other options more cost-effective at the expense of this particular program.
Okay. I guess the question is that has been brought up, I mean, hearings, and we don't know what all ramifications would be, the savings, so we can lift the caps for family care. So you're in constant communication with the state. worked very effectively with our IGR staff. Staying back to doing the slide days. So we want to end on a note of where we go from here, what steps you think need to be done. Obviously, maybe a call for meetings for this explanation, but you know, we haven't seen what these programs will do, but where the savings will come from. You know, Trophy said, you know, there's an interim period we're going to have to find out, as you both stated. So, any clarification you can give us here, or anywhere working with our staff, we're going through here in these situations? Okay, question for
the question is, how is IRIS connected with the administration? I mean, it's a,
want to explain the program.
It's a more costly approach, and what's happening now is the model is moving toward IRIS, which you indicate is over $1,000+. How are they connected with the state? And do the state realize that that model is not cost-effective?
Mr. Chair, Supervisor Holloway, yes, the IRIS program is the state's self-directed supports waiver. So it is not directly administered by the Department of Health Services. It's administered under a contract through the management group, through TMG. It's
who's TMG?
It's a private private management group.
Private management group.
Yes, sir. And really what it is for an individual who has the wherewithal and wants to make their decisions about who they hire and what kind of services they receive, IRIS allows them to do that. And the state has acknowledged the cost differential between persons served through IRIS and individuals served through the managed care organizations. They've gone back. When individuals enroll in IRIS, they get a budget for what it should take to serve them. And the state's expectation was is that people would typically have costs that were under their budgeted amount. So they have gone back. They've revised their budget calculations. They're continuing to make revisions to this program because the figures that I have in terms of the cost difference, those have come from the State Department of Health Services. So to answer your question, yes, they are aware of that differential. Our concern is that, again, taking individuals with higher cost needs, the stated reason from the state is that living in a group home is sort of contrary to the notion of self-direction, which I honestly don't really understand. And again, you can self-direct a great deal of your services through family care. So this sort of bifurcated system, they are making changes to, the state is. They are, as far as I can see, continuing to be very enthusiastic. And I will say honestly, for people for whom this program is appropriate, it works well. I'm not sure that it's appropriate for all the individuals that are enrolled, and there has been, it's without that care management piece involved, without someone negotiating costs through provider networks, through contracts, but that's where I believe the state has come into seeing some of those cost differences.
I just wanted to comment a bit on IRIS because it is a model that you see more younger individuals with disabilities select. It is not a managed care model. And in fact, the state was required to make a self-directed option available when they decided to move with family care. And as Ms. Ledger said, it is for individuals that use their Medicaid fee-for-service card, and then they have a budget. So you do see individuals who have more complex needs, higher costs, because they're able to get services that they bill to their Medicaid card, personal care, whatever, and they have a budget. So they really are looking, I think, at kind of a different breadth of services. So they do not have a case manager involved. They're able to decide where they want to go receive their services, and they direct that. They hire all of their own staff. And for some individuals and some families, they really like this model. In terms of the independent living movement, it is really about individuals with disabilities saying, I know what's best for me. I know how my care should be how I want my care done. I know where I want to purchase it for. I'm pretty savvy. I know who the providers are. And for people who have a lot of shift staff, where maybe they have a nurse that comes in, a couple different personal care providers, they have better flexibility in being able to direct that themselves as opposed to going through a care management agency. And so that's why some do prefer that model. In terms of the cost, I mean, I do think what they've seen is when you have a one capitated rate, all those costs are under that. Someone managing that, a social worker and a nurse, is where they've seen some cost efficiencies. But really, IRIS is much like the old waivers that we used to operate, where we had waiver funding and you could use the Medicaid card. So it is a different, it's financed differently, and it is a different model altogether. It's a self-determination model that says, if you give me a budget, I know what services I need. I'm able to purchase those, get them within that budget, and then I'm also able to use my Medicaid card. So I don't, you know, why if you compare a managed care model to a managed care model, but you are really comparing two different models, and they are really financed differently. It is not the same capitated rate. And again, it was required for the state to be able to offer such a model for individuals that elect and want to use that.
So when you say capitated rate, are they equally capitated, same, or
they? No, they're not, because it's not one rate, and then you provide all the services. They have a separate budget that they work with that provides some services, and they still have their Medicaid card that can provide for additional services. So it is not financed in the same way as our traditional, as our family care, where they get a capitated rate and all the services come out of there. An IRIS participant has a budget with a set amount plus their Medicaid card that they can purchase services.
Well, I guess I think IRIS.
Well, many do. That's exactly right. They see that as having more flexibility. But some individuals who appreciate having a case manager, they don't want to navigate the system. There is a nurse there that can help them. Family care is a good option. It really depends on your own particular circumstances, and this does at least give you a choice.
Okay. I got it. Thank you so much. Thank you. Advisor Brooke.
Two quick points. It seems to me that if these reforms become reality, I think Milwaukee County needs to methodically and meticulously document the impact on the available services for individuals. And I think the county should try and partner, leapfrog past the state and partner with the federal government to hold the state plan accountable to whether it meets the federal standards. I'm not under the impression that we have a Cadillac program that all across the country, you know, seniors here are, you know, are getting, you know, things that nowhere else the federal government would allow. And so I'm assuming that premise is correct. I think we might be able to help build a case with the federal government, the state, if these reforms become reality. And I do think that they probably will be, given what everyone said, that we need to help be the local documenter of those changes to get along with to kind of follow with Supervisor Jim E3A, which is going to, I think the county has to be very aggressive and very assertive, because the other long-term impact of this is not only, I think, a radical change to what's being offered to seniors and persons with disabilities, but the reality is, as we've known in the past, when a major state defunding happens, local governments who are unwilling to live with the impact to the folks in the community pick up a significant portion of those costs in order to prevent what they perceive as the negative impact. So there's a chance that Milwaukee County then would be ending up putting in tax dollars, more local tax dollars, to prevent some of the outcomes that Supervisor Dimitrievich was referencing and kind of the abominable piece of this. If we end up doing that, then you can kiss all the other mental health expansions in the community goodbye. Because
you know, as we saw in the 2012 budget, there's additional funds with mental health, but not nearly as much funds as you really want if you're going to transition to a community-based system within 3 or 4 years. So if you don't, we know we don't have enough to do, we're not starting out with enough in 2012 to get there if we were really trying to do it in, you know, 3 years or so. So now we've got this other health care issue or services issues for persons in need that would then compete with that. So I just, it was disconcerting not only from what this means for the people in this program, but disconcerting given what Supervisor Broderick said about the state not listening to what we're going to, our concerns about this, that if we do what's happened in the past, that means the county taxpayer ends up trying to, being asked to pay for some of the mitigation of this, and then other programs that we really think need to go into place get destroyed. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Kind of concluding here, I wanted to make a motion to receive and place this on file because I really want to ensure that all of our colleagues, this is the packet that our great IGR staff put together with the bill, you know, that way you can call and talk to your you know, your representatives. I think it's SB 380, I believe. But either way, you have all this information that's part of this item. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to receive and place on file so that all of our colleagues have the information and can hopefully call their legislators or well.
Okay, you made that motion, so moved. Along with that, I just had the question, we talked about the resource centers and the waiting lists. Do we need to, or do we have report, do we need information from the board on this, or is this just going to the state for them working together again on what waiting lists we have and what this could do to it? Is that a question that should be answered to? Could I throw that question out as well? Does that make sense? Maybe
yes. I think we made, I think there was a report of human needs this
okay.
last cycle on the waiting list
okay.
that we could get a few. And didn't we also, I think we got IGR information too. So,
okay.
But we regularly report to human needs on that, so we can get that to everybody.
All right, we have a motion, Mr. Fraser, to make sure it's at the place on, receive and place on file the information received today on the family care. Yes? Del Rosa? Okay. Okay.
On the assembly side, the bill was assigned to the aging long-term care as the committee. On the Senate side, an issue was introduced in the public health committee, I believe, and that's referred afterwards.
So we can share all these concerns with these committees, is what you're saying. Can we do that? Okay. Well, to send in all your information on this, we always do. Okay. All right. Thank you very much, everyone. On the motion, I'm sorry. Thank you. Receive in place on file. Yes.
Thank you. That's
what I was going to say. Okay. Sorry.
Supervisor Holloway? Brokaw?
Aye.
Brewer?
Aye.
Roberts?
Aye.
Mitrievich?
Aye.
Stephanie?
Aye.
Aye.
Receive in place on file. Supervisor Seale?
Okay. Thank you. Number five.
Item number five is a resolution in opposition to the LRB 3621, which calls for turning over any unclaimed fund money to municipalities of Oregon.
Okay. Treasurer Dilfer is recused himself.
Yes.
Is this coming up for vote? I guess it is the question. So this is why. So we certainly want to be proactive. Treasurer Dilverdi, introduce yourself, please.
My name is Dan Dilverdi, Washington County Treasurer. I just want to reiterate the comments that were made by people before me here today. There just seems to be a lot of instability in government at all levels right now. where Dale Rose and Stephanie Stein chaired them, and Dave, the committee all pointed out, things are happening very quickly right now. People are introducing measures that perhaps, because they're intended, you'd like to think they understand what they're introducing, but perhaps there are unintended consequences also to the legislation that they need to be informed of. This is really critically important for us, the Treasurer's Office, because these funding issues are really critical. With the tax rate freeze and the tax freeze in Milwaukee County, it's very difficult to make up any money that's lost in the process of these passage of bills without adequate discussion. I always feel that if you're not at the table, you're on the menu. I think we need to be at the table at these discussions and have input into these. I sort of want to be proactive in terms of getting some input into this before it reaches committee level. I think a lot of legislators, when they do these things, they don't understand the consequences. And perhaps a lot of education needs to be done on many levels to understand what the role of county government is and how we fund services. In this particular case, the unclaimed funds money originally was put together the way it is right now is because it's not money that's municipal money. It's actually money that's due to citizens of Milwaukee County. It's given to us because municipalities hadn't made successful efforts to locate the owners of these unclaimed funds. And if we as a disinterested party go out and advertise these funds, and put the information in libraries, put up press releases, and we make these funds available for a period of 10 years so people can come forward and collect money that's due to them. The county does this at its own considerable expense, publicizing of it, put it online. We keep records, detailed records for 10 years to make sure that people get requests for these money. And if we didn't do this, all 19 municipalities did this on their own, it'd be total chaos. If someone had money coming, they could check and find out when municipalities publish it, where it's listed, find out where it is. It would be pretty much a chaotic system. And at the end of this process, the county money reverts to Milwaukee County that isn't claimed. I think the state legislature originally intended this because this was money due to citizens of Milwaukee County. Milwaukee County represents all citizens of all municipalities, and so if the money is in claims, everyone benefits from it, in roads or parks or other ways the county spends this on behalf of the county citizens. This proposal actually is suggesting that after 6 months, this money go back to the municipalities of origin. It's kind of a double standard because the state unclaimed funds takes money from Milwaukee County and keeps it for the state, and now they're talking about giving municipal money back to the municipalities. It doesn't cost the legislature anything, but it would be a big hole in our budget. It would be about a little more than $1 million if we had a year for Milwaukee County to lose. And the thing is that there's no alternative to make up for this bill. We'd simply lose $1 million, and unless we levy new taxes to both pay for the cost of the system, which now we're doing for free for the municipalities, but also to make up for the $1 million, it's like musical, it's like a shell game with them. If we're taking, if we're giving money back to the municipality, we're making it up by taxing the taxpayers even more money to make up for it. I think it's really not well thought out. I think it needs to be understood. Education legislation explaining why it's done originally this way, and also the economic impact to the taxpayers in this community. And that's why I presented this, so we could get started on the process early on. A lot of things are happening in the legislature right now that are happening very quickly. To me, they're not always being thought out as well as they should be. I think this is more of a discussion process, and changes to this level really need the time discussion instead of being passed quickly when they're introduced suddenly like this. There have been bills, as you all know, in the legislature that have had hearings where there's still an LRB not meeting before they have assembly or something. So I wanted to be sure that we got a head start on this and got our positioning quickly and education started.
Okay, thank you. Any questions or movement on this resolution from anyone? Supervisor DeBrew, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move approval of the resolution and just to double check, who are the sponsors of this?
Sure.
The three sponsors, the two of which are in the first chair, and an additional sponsor is the commission.
Their names?
Representative Stan Bauer, who is one of the individuals that will be talking to the election. Then Representative Fiendsville, who is the main sponsor.
From Fiendsville? So what's her
name? Fiendsville.
Oh, okay.
Where's she from?
But no one from our county?
No, one of the big sponsors.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any comments?
You know, they think they'll be able to bring some revenue into the economy. They don't have a clue not the impact of it. That's what it is.
Okay, we have a motion for Supervisor Furlong. Approval. Madam Clerk, please.
Supervisor Soloway?
Aye.
Workhouse?
Aye.
Bruin?
Aye.
Barber?
Aye.
McNamish?
Aye.
McNamara?
Aye.
Mr. Chair?
Aye.
Motion to approve? Subject.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Thanks for your attendance this morning, everyone.
Adjourned.